Eric Weihenmayer, the blind mountaineer who successfully scaled Mount Everest, wrote this in Outside Magazine. He said, "A few days after I arrived in the Khumbu Valley for the Mount Everest climb, a rumor began circulating. Because I wasn't flopping on my face every few minutes, the Sherpas thought I was lying about my blindness. Women would approach me in the bazaar and wave their hands in front of my face, and I'd feel the wind and flinch, which only confirmed their suspicions. Finally, I resorted to drastic measures. I asked Kami Tenzing, our climbing sirdar, into the kitchen tent. And Kami, I said, I want to give you a message to take back to the Sherpas. I pulled down my lower left eyelid, leaned my head forward, and my prosthetic eye plopped into my palm. And then I said, I can take the other out if you want. He said firmly, no, not necessary. Some people need proof before they're willing to believe anything. I'd say that pulling out your glass eye and offering to take the other one out also qualifies as a pretty good sign that you're blind. But why didn't they just believe him to begin with? They had all the facts. They had testimony from others in front of them. Why did they have to have a sign? Makes us wonder, why don't we take God at his word? We have his written promises. We have the testimony of others who know by experience that God's word is true. In many instances, we have the evidence right in front of our eyes. So why do we struggle to believe God? Why do we seek signs to help us believe? Do we really have faith if we're constantly looking for signs that are going to confirm what God has already said? Now, those are tough questions because we consider ourselves to be men and women of faith, and we are. But do we really have the deep, abiding faith that God desires for us? Let's go to Mark chapter 8 to see how God would answer that. Mark chapter 6 tells us about the feeding of the 5,000 people. It was an amazing miracle. And Jesus follows that up here in Mark chapter 8 with the feeding of the 4,000. Another amazing miracle that takes on greater significance since it's a repeat of that previous miracle. The disciples have already seen this situation. They've already seen this miracle before. There should not be any problem with believing that it can happen. Verse 1 tells us, a great crowd had gathered around Jesus. And then in verse 9 of chapter 8, it puts the number of that crowd at about 4,000 people. The problem is, there was nothing left to eat. In verse 2, Jesus tells the disciples he's moved with compassion because of the people's faithfulness. They'd been there with Jesus for 3 days, even though they had run out of food. And the problem had reached crisis proportions. In verse 3, Jesus said, "And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come from far away." And then the problem was compounded by their location. Verse 4, it says his disciples answered him, "How can one feed these people with bread here in this desolate place?" Well, the desolate place they were in was the region of Decapolis. The Decapolis was located in the mountainous area to the southeast of the Sea of Galilee, and there just wasn't anywhere close that they could go for food. It would be somewhat like taking several thousand people and putting them out West River about halfway between Lemmon and Faith. Where can you go? Where can you walk to if you're going to find food? There just isn't anywhere to go. And that's where Jesus replicates his earlier miracle. After doing some quick checking, they found only 7 loaves of bread were left. And as he'd done before, Jesus multiplied the loaves of bread. Verse 6 says he directed the crowd to sit down on the ground. He took the 7 loaves, and having given thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And they set them before the crowd. Now verse 7 tells us they also had a few small fish, and he multiplied those as well. The miracle is made clear in verse 8. And they ate and were satisfied. And they took up the broken pieces left over, 7 baskets full. Now I want you to notice the abundance of this miracle. Not only did everyone get something to eat, but they were all satisfied. Nobody left there hungry. And there were 7 large baskets of food left over. Now you talk about a sign. That's a major sign. No one should have had any questions about Jesus after that repeat performance of that miracle. Everyone present should have had full, unquestioning faith after that. But unfortunately, it wasn't enough for everyone. As the passage continues, Jesus has to confront the problems of signs and faith. He wants the people to understand signs are simply a poor substitute for faith. He explains that in Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 11. The first thing we find here is that Jesus tells them that signs don't provide answers. Let's list for a moment just the miracles Jesus has already performed up to this point in his ministry. He has turned water into wine. He's healed a multitude of people of a number of normal diseases, along with demoniacs and paralytics and lepers and people with shriveled limbs and the blind. He has calmed a storming lake. He's walked on water. He's fed the 5,000 with just a handful of bread and fish, and he's raised at least 2 children from the dead. Now, those are just the recorded miracles. The gospel writers tell us there isn't room to give account of all the miracles Jesus had performed just up to this point in his ministry. If people were looking for signs of who Jesus was and where he'd come from, they had more than enough evidence right in front of their eyes. Now, you would think that there wouldn't be any room left for doubts in anyone's mind. Would you believe if you had all that proof? Verse 10 tells us, immediately after the miracle of feeding the 4,000, Jesus got on a boat with his disciples and crossed the Sea of Galilee, landing at the district of Dalmanutha. When he arrived, the Pharisees were waiting for him, and they were ready for a fight. Verse 11 tells us the Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. Now, picture, if you can, the attitude of these Pharisees. They weren't there for a discussion. They weren't there for a debate. They were there to test Jesus, or more accurately, they were there to trap him. The test centers around the sign they were seeking. They had seen many of Jesus' miracles. They'd heard about many others. The people really couldn't talk about anything else other than the power that Jesus had displayed. By asking for a specific sign in the heavens, some kind of astronomical miracle like darkening the sun or a meteorite flashing across the sky on demand, they planned to trap Jesus into agreeing to do something that they were dead certain he could not do. So there's no hint of belief in this test, just evil. Well, their spiritual blindness struck Jesus to the core of his being. Verse 12 at the beginning says, he sighed deeply in his spirit. That word translated sighed deeply. It speaks of an audible sound that comes from so deep within that it sounds really like a groan. There's a sense of sorrow, a deep spiritual pain that comes through in this sound. It's like there aren't any words to express how painful this confrontation is in Jesus' spirit. The problem is, the Pharisees are looking for a sign that they can use against Jesus. Something that will prove that he's not who people are beginning to believe he is. And no sign can do that. Signs don't provide answers. They only provide an opportunity to make an interpretation. In their spiritual blindness, the Pharisees just could not understand that. And Jesus refused to play the game with them. At the end of verse 12, he says, "Why does this generation seek a sign? Truly I say to you, no sign will be given to this generation." He simply refused to give them any kind of sign. If they had not found answers in the signs they had already seen, there is no way they would find answers in any other manufactured signs that Jesus might display. Daniel Kahneman is a brilliant psychologist, a Nobel Prize-winning economist. In 2011, he was named to Bloomberg's 50 Most Influential People in Global Finance. Listen to what he has to say about the quality of rational thinking in today's world. He says, "We're normally blind about our own blindness. We're generally overconfident in our opinions and our impressions and judgments. We exaggerate how knowable the world is." He goes on to say what psychology and behavioral economics have shown is that people don't think very carefully. They're influenced by all sorts of superficial things in their decision making, and they procrastinate and don't read the small print. Now, in other words, what he's saying is we don't know what we don't know. And when we seek answers, we seek them in the wrong places. See, signs don't provide answers. And yet, so many people waste their lives looking for signs. So, Jesus is saying, stop looking for signs. They'll never provide answers for questions that can only be answered by faith. Either you believe Jesus, or you don't. Signs are not going to change a lack of that belief and faith. They don't provide answers. As we go on, we find that Jesus teaches them that signs don't provide understanding. You would expect spiritual blindness from the Pharisees. They looked at Jesus as a huge challenge to their authority. They weren't ready to accept anything Jesus might do. What no one would have expected was the spiritual blindness displayed by the disciples. See, the disciples were with Jesus when he fed the 5,000. They took part in that miracle. They delivered the bread and the fish that never seemed to run out. And even more recent in history, they were a part of the miracle as Jesus fed the 4,000 with just 7 loaves of bread and a few small fish. They never should have questioned Jesus' ability to provide food when it was necessary. Well, the disciples were with Jesus when he left the region of the Decapolis. Across the Sea of Galilee, he rebuked the Pharisees at Dalmanutha for demanding miraculous signs. And verse 13 tells us that after that rebuke, Jesus and the disciples got into the boat and they crossed the sea again. And as they were crossing the sea, they got hungry. And they realized they only had 1 loaf of bread between them. Now, that should not have been a problem. They had just seen Jesus multiply bread and fish to feed thousands of people. Multiplying 1 loaf for 13 people was a pretty puny miracle compared to that. But it was a problem for the disciples. Verse 16 says they began discussing with one another the fact that they had no bread. Now, I want you to think about this. When they embarked on the boat trip across the Sea of Galilee, Jesus had given them their spiritual marching orders. Verse 15, Jesus cautioned them, saying, "Watch out. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." The leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. You know what that was? It was unbelief. It was spiritual blindness. They needed to be constantly on guard against that spiritual blindness. It sets in so easily, we don't even see it coming. Just all of a sudden it's there, and we're trapped in growing sin and apostasy. Well, here's Jesus' rebuke of the disciples when they're discussing this lack of food. Verses 17 and 18, Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why are you discussing the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember?" To paraphrase it, put it more bluntly, Jesus is saying to them, are you really that blind and deaf and dumb? Jesus reminds them once again of the signs they had just seen, starting with the feeding of the 5,000. In verse 19, he says, "When I broke the five loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" They said to him, 12. He goes on from there to the more recent feeding of the 4,000. In verse 20, "And the seven for the 4,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces did you take up?" And the disciples said to him, 7. It just kind of boggles the mind to think. They'd so recently been a part of these miracles that they'd seen and they'd experienced Jesus' power, but they'd already forgotten it. They never applied it to their own lives. They were sitting in the boat with the man who had provided more food than any of them could have imagined, and they were still all worried and upset because they didn't have enough food. That's the leaven of the Pharisees. It's called spiritual blindness and unbelief. And Jesus concludes the rebuke with a simple question in verse 21. He said to them, "Do you not yet understand?" The question is, when were they going to understand? They had received all the signs they needed, and yet they were still blind because signs don't provide understanding. What signs do is reveal our spiritual blindness and provide an opportunity to choose faith. A good illustration of that is found in the movie Finding Neverland. It's a movie based on the true story of the playwright J.M. Barrie, and it takes place during the summer that he wrote the book Peter Pan. Time he spent playing imaginative games with four young boys who were going through a series of family crises helped Barrie to imagine the story about a boy who never grows up. In one scene, Barrie is walking with his large dog Porthos in the park, and he's just met the four boys and their mother. And the oldest boy asks Barrie what he does for a living, and he answers by saying playfully, "Well, currently, I make my living entertaining princes and their courts with my trained bear Porthos. If you command your brother Peter to join us, I am willing to give you just such a performance." The other boys agree. So Barrie sets himself up with his dog in front of the seated family, and he faces his dog and he says, "I want you to pay particular attention to the teeth. Some unscrupulous trainers will show you a bear whose teeth have all been pulled, while other cowards will force the brute into a muzzle. Only the true master would attempt these tricks without either measure of safety." Well, 5-year-old Peter is not in the mood to play, and he leans toward his mother and he defiantly says, "Why did you bring me over here? This is absurd. It's just a dog." And Barrie, who is walking back to Porthos, suddenly turns around. "Just a dog?" he asks. "Just?" Porthos dreams of being a bear, and you want to dash those dreams by saying he's just a dog? What a horrible candle-snuffing word. That's like saying he can't climb that mountain. He's just a man. Or that's not a diamond. It's just a rock. Before turning back to the dog, Barry gives the boy an appraising look and he mutters, "Just." And so Peter retorts, "Fine then. Turn him into a bear if you can." And Barry looks Peter in the eye and he says, "With those eyes, my bonny lad, I'm afraid you'd never see it." You see, signs don't provide understanding. They reveal blindness. The demand for signs is not faith. It's a lack of faith. Faith is what we find when we put everything else aside and simply believe God, take him at his word, whether it seems impossible or not, and whether his word is confirmed or not. You know what signs do? Signs create what we can call a peephole faith. Now, anybody who lives up here in the Northland or even further north understands what it means to be a peephole driver. You're in a hurry to get to work on time. You walk out into the cold and you find that your car is encased in a layer of snow and ice from an overnight storm. So you start the car up, you turn up the heater, you get your scraper, you battle to tip out just a clear space on your windshield. And after a few minutes, you've cleared away an opening the size of a large pepperoni pizza. But by now you're shivering and miserable. And you realize it's going to take at least 10 more minutes to clean the rest of the windshield. So you move to the rear window and you scrape off a narrower opening, the size of maybe a small sausage pizza with extra olives. Just throw them in there for that. And you do the same with the side windows. And then you throw caution to the frigid winds and get in the car and drive away. And then it hits you. You can hardly see. You drive really slow, you lean up close to the windshield, you peer out your peephole, you hope against hope that you don't run into anyone before the heater and the defrosters melt more of the ice away from your windows. Worse yet, as you peer out your peephole, you notice that other drivers are peering out their peepholes. Peephole driving. It's an apt picture of what it's like to go through life with the limited vision that comes from limited understanding and wisdom. The kind of limitations that come from substituting signs for faith. Jesus continually confronted people who were looking for signs. And every time he rebuked them for their lack of faith. So what will you do? Will you seek signs, or will you learn to live by faith? Pray with me. Father, help us to be men and women of faith. Not men and women of faith in signs, but men and women of faith in you, and in your power, and in your word. Lord, help us to walk by faith this week, we pray, in Jesus' precious name. Amen.